darf es etwas mehr Blick sein. Für dich und alle Freunde. Und eine eigene Strandvilla.
Jetzt im Euro-Jackpot. Rund 40 Millionen Euro. Das Leben könnte so Jackpot sein. Mit Euro-Jackpot. In jeder Lotto-Annahmestelle und auf lottobayern.de. Lotto Bayern. Nimm dein Glück in die Hand.
Spielteilnahme ab 18. Chance auf den Höchstgewinn 1 zu 140 Millionen. Glücksspiel kann süchtig machen. Hilfe unter bzga.de.
Darf es etwas mehr Blick sein? Für dich und alle Freunde. Und eine eigene Strandvilla.
Jetzt im Euro-Jackpot. Rund 40 Millionen Euro. Das Leben könnte so Jackpot sein. Mit Euro-Jackpot. In jeder Lotto-Annahmestelle und auf lottobayern.de. Lotto Bayern. Nimm dein Glück in die Hand.
Spielteilnahme ab 18. Chance auf den Höchstgewinn 1 zu 140 Millionen. Glücksspiel kann süchtig machen. Hilfe unter bzga.de.
Intercepted in the mailroom of Stragview Prison, March 16th, 2009. Hey Mary, it's me, Peter. I really hope this gets to you. They say the mailroom checks all outgoing mail, but I hope that this letter slips through somehow. I've really messed up this time, Mary. Worse than all the other times. I'm sitting in a 10x12 concrete box surrounded by other noisy inmates in similar cells, and I have never felt safer in my life. After what happened yesterday, it's a wonder I can feel anything at all. I had to wait a whole day to write this letter to you because my hands wouldn't stop shaking. I'm freaking out, knowing that those things are just beyond the fence, knowing they could come in at any time and have me. I'm rambling. You probably feel pretty lost. Let me start at the beginning. It's been a long 3 years behind the fence. I've been doing okay, trying to make my time matter, but it's hard not to think about what you're missing on the outside. I've been palling around with some guys who are in here for a hell of a lot more than B&E like me, and they had figured out a way to escape. One of them, Marcus Rees, is actually a pretty big time writer. He says he's written enough novels about crime, punishment, and life in prison. Escaping one should be easy. Clyde, he's our muscle, figured we could make it over the fence if we got enough clothes from the laundry. Booker, who works in the laundry, supplied us with the clothes so we could make our escape. We had paid off the white nationalists to start trouble during recreation. It always takes a long time to set these things up in the movies, but you'd be surprised how quickly it all came together. Booker got our laundry bags stuffed with extra clothes. Clyde and I traded the white nationalists a lot of canteen and personal items for their help. Rees found some books in the library to help us make it over the fence. Stragview is an old prison with a checkered past, and it wasn't hard to find books on it and information online in the resource centre. Within 2 weeks, the escape went from something we'd been joking around about to a full-fledged plan that we were ready to see enacted. It was cold and foggy when we made our break. Given the weather, no one thought it was weird when we wore our coats and boots to the rec yard. We stuffed our blankets under the coats, those coarse wool things they give us to sleep under, and packed whatever food we had left in our pockets. Stragview is surrounded by woods, and we knew we'd be in for a long run if we made it past the perimeter. We each had enough supplies to take us through the night, and when we entered the yard, we were confident that we would make it out. Rees had been talking to the guys on the maintenance crew. They had told him about a section of fence where the power wasn't working after a lightning strike last month. It was at a junction near the wreck fence, and we knew that would be our climbing point. The ruckus started off at 3 p.m. Some of the white nationalist guys started pretending to fight, and pretty soon everyone was getting in on the action. When the guards went to break it up, we made our move for the fence. We threw the blankets over the razor wire and were over the first fence and halfway up the second before anyone took notice. By the time they were organizing to do anything about it, we were on the other side and making for the woods. The woods are about 30 feet of open grassland from the fence. We booked it, hearing the guards shouting behind us. And when a shotgun went off, we all heard Booker fall down screaming. I looked back, seeing him curled up in the grass, and put on an extra burst of speed as our pursuers gained on us. They stopped to secure Booker, though, and that was when we made the woods and found safety. We all ran in, not stopping when the trees encircled us. But none of us could have expected what happened next. Nothing. No one came after us. We heard the dogs, and we could see the guards backing away from the woods. But no one seemed to want to come beyond the trees to get us. "Ha! These pussies don't want to come after us. Guess they're afraid of getting lost in the woods," Clyde said. That should have tipped us off right away. We started to move into the woods, the sun setting behind us as we went. The forest seemed to be mostly pines, their needles crunching underfoot as we made our way deeper into the gloom. It didn't register at first, but the deeper we went in, the more I noticed the silence. Clyde was oblivious. The closest he'd ever been to a forest was a park somewhere in the inner city, but I could tell that Marcus was troubled by the silence. Forests aren't loud, but they usually have some noise. Birds, squirrels, the drones of insects, anything to remind you that you were in an active ecosystem. We'd been walking for about 3 hours when I realized something else. We hadn't passed a stream or a river or any kind of water source. I had 2 bottles of water in my coat pocket, and I knew Marcus did too. Clyde had drunk one of his not long after getting started, and if there was no water out here, we could be in for some trouble. The sun was starting to get really low now, and I wondered why we hadn't hit the road yet. 3 hours was a lot of walking. We should have hit something by now. A road, a trail, an old trailer or something. And why hadn't we seen any helicopters either? We had heard no pursuing dogs, heard no air search being conducted for 3 missing inmates. What the hell were they doing? As the sun started to creep over the horizon, that's when I first heard the noise. We had been crunching along on the pine needles all day, so maybe it had been following us all along. I don't think it had. I think it had only started once the sun got low. As we moved, I began to hear something heavy coming down on the pine needles. It sounded like a bear or a big cat, but I couldn't see anything whenever I looked around. The others didn't notice. They had been arguing. "We need to stop for the night," Clyde was saying. He had started to slow down in the last hour, and he was clearly getting tired. He don't really do as much walking in prison as he'd think, and none of us were really prepared for a 3-hour hike through the woods. Marcus wouldn't hear of it, though. "I need to get out of these woods. I will walk until I fall down if that's what it takes, but I'm not stopping until I get out." Clyde scoffed. "We keep going like this, and we're going to end up dead. We need to stop for the night." "Do whatever you want. I'm not stopping," Marcus said. Clyde started gathering sticks for a fire, clearing a place for us to sit, while Marcus just kept walking. I kind of wanted to go with him. I kind of felt like going with him might be the best idea. But I was tired, and I really just wanted to stop for the night. I watched Marcus disappear into the dwindling light and felt sure that I would never see him again. Clyde threw a pine cone at me and then told me to help out. And the next time I looked up, he was gone. By 7:30, it was dark. By 9 o'clock, you couldn't have seen your face in front of your hand. Clyde and I managed to get a small fire going, and we ate our chips and granola bars sullenly. We shivered in our canvas coats, the garments not providing a lot of warmth, and our blue prison uniforms offered a lot less. The fire was a weak thing, but if they did decide to send out choppers, then it would be harder to see if our light was low. Clyde had said this too, but I think it was mostly to make up for his weak little fire. The pine needles didn't burn very well, and most of the wood was rotten and full of bugs. We had discovered this when we tried to pull a log over to sit on. It had fallen apart in our hands, wet wood spilling insects all down our arms, replied, had shaken his arms and slapped at his sleeves, and then moved away from the squirming remains as they writhed and on the bed of pine needles. "How is this so wet?" Clyde asked. "I don't remember it raining recently." As we sat in the deepening darkness, I could feel the wet sinking into my pants too. It was wet out here. Had it been this wet earlier? I put a hand to the ground and felt something sticky come in contact with my palm. I pulled it up to my eyes, squinting hard at the thick dark muck that clung to it, and shook my hand vigorously a moment later. Whatever was there, it had seemed to move. I came off the ground, swiping at the bottom of my pants and looking around in the scant firelight. I could just imagine a swarm of insects or snakes moving around me, but the needle-strewn ground looked just as solid as it ever had. Clyde sprang awake, looking around before settling his eyes back onto me.
"What? What's going on?" he asked, a little huffily.
"Nothing, I guess. I thought I felt something on me," I said, lamely. He settled back, but he kept peeking at me like he didn't exactly trust me. I curled up on the ground and tried to ignore the moisture that sank into my clothes. I was sure I could feel things moving under me, but I tried to get some sleep. Tomorrow, we would find our way out of these woods and be free again. I had no illusions of a lengthy freedom, but wanted to see all of you so badly that I didn't care how long it lasted. As I tried to sleep, though, I heard the crunching again. We had been making too much noise for me to be sure, but I didn't think I had heard it since Clyde and I had stopped for the night. Earlier, it had sounded big. Now, it sounded huge. Whatever was attached to that foot sounded like it was big enough to gobble us up in one bite. It crunched again, stalking in with slow deliberation. As it got closer and closer to our little campsite, I lay as still as I could, hoping I couldn't be noticed as the thing dropped its heavy feet onto the blanket of pine needles. When it passed me, I had to stifle a sigh of relief. I glanced up, peeking between my lids to see the hulking thing as it stood, framed in the meager campfire. It was black, the guttering fire showing a long, sleek body that looked more insect-like feline. Its feet ended in killer claws that sank into the nettles as it strode towards the fire. Its head was turned away from me, but I could hear it sniffling, filling its nostrils with constant scent, and thought for one wild moment that it might be blind. It lowered its head to the campfire and sniffed at it, the breathing agitated as it smelled the alien aroma. Then, Clyde began to scream suddenly, and it whipped its head towards him. Clyde had been closer to the fire than I was, and he must have come awake to find this huge creature skulking near him. I heard his back pedal through the pine needles, tearing up the earth as he frantically tried to get away. That was when the beast loosed the most unearthly sound I'd ever hear. It was high and yowly, like a small animal caught in something, and it stomped out the meager fire as it lunged at him. His screams were muffled as the beast ripped into him, and at that moment, I knew that I was next if I didn't do something pretty damn quick. I lunged up, needles flying as I threw them up behind me, and ran into the dark woods. I was all but blind, the moon providing very little by way of light. I bumped into trees and felt their surfaces try to catch hold of me. The ground itself seemed to drag my boots into it, and I felt the panic racing through me as I raced like my life depended on it. I didn't know where I was going or what I would find when I got there, but I knew it had to be better than this. After a few minutes, I heard something big behind me, pushing me to run faster. Trees seemed to whip out at me in the soupy darkness, and I juked around them without giving it any real thought. I remembered when I was 7. We watched Snow White on the old VHS player. I remembered how the Nightmare Forest had terrified you almost as much as it had Snow White, and I realized that I was there. I was running through a nightmare, and my only hope was to wake up. I don't know how long I ran. At some point, I could hear the massive beast chasing me through the woods. At another, it sounded as if a whole pack of them were coming after me. I heard trees break and limbs snap as they flung themselves at me with wild abandon. I felt something sharp rip across my back, but my fear was so palpable that I barely felt it. A doctor would later tell me that I had 3 long cuts to my back that looked like they'd been made with a scalpel. At that point though, I was just happy to be alive. I ran for what felt like hours. My legs burned and my chest heaved, but I could still hear the pack behind me. They were close. I wasn't sure how I had outrun them this long when my foot hit a hole and sent me sprawling. I rolled through the raking fingers of trees, and when I came to rest, I was sure I was dead. The pack would be on me, and I would be torn to shreds. I hadn't seen what happened to Clyde, and that was a mercy. The unknown is much less scarier than anticipated. When the blow didn't come though, I looked back through my fingers to see the edge of the woods. I had come to rest in an open area, the night sky strewn out before me, and I was aware of the sound of insects and night birds as they went about their evening. I looked back at the woods, and I could see a small pack of eyeless faces, their heads smooth and bullet-shaped as they gnashed their teeth and slunk back into the woods. My breathing was still heavy, but I flopped back on the grass and laughed despite my terror. I had survived. I was free of the hellscape forest. When the spotlights of Stragview found me, I was almost relieved. I was cuffed and dragged back inside the gates. I didn't resist. Why would I? I had seen what lay beyond the fence, and I was in no hurry to go back to it. They took me to medical, cleaned and bandaged my wounds, and then took me right to confinement and dropped an escape charge on me. As I was brought in, the other inmates tried to talk to me, tried to get my attention, but I was as silent as the grave. I lay in my mat and tried to sleep, knowing that my pursuers' eyeless faces would never leave me. I wasn't there long though. About an hour into my confinement stay, 2 officers came to escort me into the disciplinary room where they hold DR court. "Warden wants to see you," they said. I accepted my cuffs and went meekly. Even at 1 o'clock in the morning, the warden looked resplendent in his pinstripe suit and little gold glasses. His salt and pepper hair was in the same crew cut he always wore, and the edges looked like he had cut them with a ruler. As he leaned over the desk, I could tell he was more amused than angry. We see the warden from time to time, usually only during important inspections. To most inmates, he's almost a mythical figure. Like a shark, he only comes around once there's blood in the water. "Did you enjoy your little hike?" he asked. The lights from the fluorescence glittered off the lenses of his glasses, and for a moment his eyes linked as smooth as the creature's faces. "I could give you an extra 5 years for escaping, you know. You've got 2 more years, and I can tell that you're desperate to be back with your family. Why else would you run after all?" I sat, saying nothing. He fixed me with a hard look. "We have one of them in here, you know." My eyes snapped to his. "Over in Quad 2, actually. A little accident, but he's still in there, and he's ravenous." I could see one of the officers shudder. An older guy who looked like retirement should have come a few years ago. "The doors are sealed, but I'm sure we could arrange a meeting if you really want to see him." I shivered, not even wanting to know that one of those things was in the fence. "What do you want?" I asked him, ready for this to be over and me to get back behind a door. "We already have inmate Booker back in custody, and now we have you as well. Inmate Reese and inmate Dawn are still at large, however. I want to know where they are. For that, I won't charge you with escape. Refuse, and I'll deny we ever found you." The implications were clear. there would be no evidence of me to find. He would give me to the creature. Clyde is dead. Inmate Dawn. Your creatures killed him out in the woods. I don't know what happened to Reese. He left before nightfall and just kept walking. I would assume that he's dead too. That seemed to appease the warden, and he nodded at the guards. Take him back to his cell. He's under investigation for the next 30 days or until medical says his back is healed. If he gives you any fuss. He fixed me with a hard stare. You know where to put him. I'm writing this letter to you in the hopes that you'll read it. It's not right what they've got out there. It's not okay to have things like that loose in the world. People should know about what lurks in the woods around Stragview. As I sit here in my cell, I can almost feel their eyeless faces looking at me. I'll doubt I'll ever forget them.
Wünschst du dir jemanden, der dich versteht wie kein anderer? Jemand, der deine Wünsche wahr werden lässt und mit dir das schönste Abenteuer deines Lebens erleben möchte? Die Commerce-Plattform Shopify revolutioniert Millionen von Unternehmen weltweit. Mit Shopify richtest du im Nu deinen Online-Shop ein, ganz ohne Programmier- oder Designkenntnisse. Dank der effizienten Einrichtung und intuitiven Social-Media- und Online-Marketplace-Integration kannst du über Instagram, eBay und Co. werben und verkaufen. Neue Zielgruppen zu erreichen war noch nie so einfach. Shopify bietet auf einer einzigen sicheren Plattform alle Tools, um dein Online-Business aufzubauen. Kostenlos testen und dein Business der Welt präsentieren. Shopify.de/try besuchen. Einfach Shopify.de/try eingeben und loslegen. Made for Germany. Powered by Shopify. Wünschst du dir jemanden, der dich versteht wie kein anderer? Jemand, der deine Wünsche wahr werden lässt und mit dir das schönste Abenteuer deines Lebens erleben möchte? Die Commerce-Plattform Shopify revolutioniert Millionen von Unternehmen weltweit. Mit Shopify richtest du im Nu deinen Online-Shop ein, ganz ohne Programmier- oder Designkenntnisse. Dank der effizienten Einrichtung und intuitiven Social-Media- und Online-Marketplace-Integration kannst du über Instagram, eBay und Co. werben und verkaufen. Neue Zielgruppen zu erreichen war noch nie so einfach. Shopify bietet auf einer einzigen sicheren Plattform alle Tools, um dein Online-Business aufzubauen. Kostenlos testen und dein Business der Welt präsentieren. Shopify.de/try besuchen. Einfach Shopify.de/try eingeben und loslegen. Made for Germany. Powered by Shopify.